Well, we're in conversation with James Devaney and Ken as well. James, is it particularly difficult? Maybe it's not particularly difficult, but I imagine it's incredibly difficult to give up drink. Maybe it's easier with drugs because you just don't go around people that have them or what. But with drink, it's everywhere. Every corner, every main street, every time you go into a supermarket, every time you watch the football, if you go to a communion, there's drink. If someone wins a football match, there's drink. Yep. If someone's dead, there's drink. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make it more difficult and challenging in the recovery process?
The drink would be more socially, I suppose, more socially acceptable and more out there. But alcohol, it's a drug as well, the same as any other drug, same as cocaine, same as heroin. It's all about, it's people's crutch. And stopping it and changing their life, I know for myself and I know from working with a lot of people, it's a very, very scary prospect. As Ken says, yes, they're stopping it, but there's that first thought and that fear comes on, what do I do without it? How do I live without it?
How do you fill the gaps?
How do you fill the gaps? What about, and it's very like a grieving process, because you're letting go of you're not just letting go of a chemical, you're not just letting go of alcohol and drugs, you're letting go of a lifestyle, you're letting go of the people that you knocked around with. Sometimes you're letting go of family members, you know, you're letting go of a lot more than just the bottle or the drug. And it's that change. It's about, I suppose, finding new networks, finding new supportive people. It's a huge change.
But the function of this conversation is to show that there is, you can make those changes.
Yes, yes.
There is a life after drink and alcohol. There's a very fulfilling, more healthy, you know, more in yourself sort of situation. Like, it is tough and you have to recognise it's tough, and it's a tough to recognise you have a problem. It's tough to go and get help. It's tough to stay off. But that doesn't mean that everything that follows does not compensate you for that.
Yeah. And it's I suppose when we look at addiction's a taker, but recovery's a giver. And if we look at what addiction can take away from us, if we look upon recovery as in what recovery can give us, that new life, that new people, new supports, jobs, training, education, housing, all those things come into play. It's not just, as I say, it's not just stopping the chemical. And that's why with the CDP and the projects we run, those first 4 years on the CE scheme are really helping people, helping their own personal development, getting maybe people back into education, getting people back onto training courses, getting them a bit of work experience, bulking up their CV a wee bit. Because very often coming out of addiction, a CV can be very bare. It can be very, very bare. And this is what the drug rehab CE scheme is about. It's about bulking up that there. Because it can be very, one of the biggest triggers, an early recovery, it could be housing, it could be no employment, it could be no prospects, no training. And this is what the CE scheme is about, giving people prospects, giving people new hope. And that's what recovery is about, new hope. And that's what we have the Saturday's event about, Ken, celebrating that.
And we'll talk about that a bit more. Ken, come in there, please.
There you were saying, like, I'll just give you an example. You're talking about, like, especially in the early days of protecting yourself from the alcohol, and as you said, it's everywhere. And I remember myself coming out of treatment, and I started going back into the pubs for about 6 weeks, you know, and going watching football and stuff like that. And
so you thought, I can still be in an environment where I can drink a Coke or a water
but
or something?
Actually, it was because I had the aftercare, and it was said to me in aftercare by a man. He said, are you going? He said, are you going? He got something from me. And I went all defensive. And I said, I'm not drinking, you know. He said, you're going to drink,
right.
You know. So they talk about the tools, all those tools you get to protect yourself. And then I was just thinking of something. I heard one thing from a man at a meeting one day, and he just said, you can have all the tools you like. If they're not sharp, they won't work.
Yeah.
You know? So I have to maintain. So that's what I'm doing daily. Okay. It's maintaining. You know.
And is that a slog? Is I want to encourage people. Maybe one person listening to this, and that's all we need, isn't it?
Yeah.
It sounds like it's a slog, but it's not, is it? It's just part of your life.
I suppose there's a difference between sobriety and contented sobriety.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I didn't get sober to go around down, you know what I mean? And what it said to me after a few years, you're walking tall, you're taller. People would have said it wouldn't see me. You know, so they'd notice where I must have been slouched over for years, carrying the weight. So, certainly, obviously in the early days, you know what I mean? It was difficult, you know what I mean? And I made it particularly difficult on myself, you know, because I would have still had that shield around me, you mm-hmm, know, mm-hmm. and I wasn't letting anybody in, like a sponsor or anything like that. And but I was still doing lots of stuff. I was doing the aftercare and I was doing my meetings and I was doing what I was asked to do. But I still needed extra. I needed to get to talk to somebody, you know, in a really safe environment that he could come in and start to trickle. Because obviously I was running on my emotions, running for all my life, you know. And they talk about the geographical running and then the other stuff where you're running from yourself. So I done the geographical stuff, Dublin to Wicklow, Wicklow to Donegal, you know. So I'm not on that journey anymore. Yeah. There's no more running. I mean, it would have been easy to say no to this today. This is part of challenging my recovery, you know.
Yeah, that's well, right. you're meeting that challenge head on, Ken, no doubt about that. A message came in here, and I actually say it's one message, but it's probably reflective of people in a lot of situations out there today, and it reads as follows, James. There's a member in my family, and they will not admit that they are an alcoholic. As a result, we've had to cut all ties with them, and now they've started to badmouth us online, which isn't, we can't talk to that, but that's fine. But I've been advised to stay away from it and offline. I've had to cut all contact. Am I doing the right thing to isolate myself from him? I feel so helpless and guilty. So we'll park the weather, there's a to and fro and online. Mm-hmm. I think it's a typical situation where people have tried to help someone. They don't want the help at that time, or they don't admit they have a problem. And then they've had to protect themselves and say, well, you won't listen to me. I'm going to have to take a step back now and protect my family unit and those around me. And then they go, well, what if something happens to them? Am I being a bad person in their life? Yeah. There's no easy answer to any of this. But what would you say to that person, James?
There is no easy answer, and it's certainly reflective of addiction and, as Ken mentioned, about the effects that it has within the family. And one of the hardest decisions for family members is making that decision to step back. What I always say is, if it affects the family, there's as much help out there now for family members, like that person that has sent in that text or that email. There's as much help out there now for the family members as there is for the people taking the alcohol. Because very often, the people around can suffer greatly, because the person taking the chemical or drugs, they're anaesthetised. They don't feel the pain.
Mm.
But the family members haven't got drugs, they haven't got drinks to numb their pain. And they're left sitting with that and making decisions like that, and making decisions for their children and for other family members. And they sometimes the only decision left to them is to step back.
Yeah, and you've had way more experience in this, Ken and James, than I would have. But I've spoken to a lot of people, and It's very rare that they make a decision or have a realization because someone said something to them. Often they kind of have to arrive at that point themselves.
Yeah.
Does that mean then there's nothing you can say, or no point trying? Or
my experience is, and this is where family support comes in, very, very important. Family support helps the person, like that person who sent in the text, that they become stronger themselves. They're able to set boundaries. That then when the person who is taking the chemical sees the strength in the other person, as evidence-based, it does show they do turn to the person then for help. Okay. But until the person's ready themselves, that is it's the hardest thing
so
about
tough,
addiction.
Isn't it?
It is tough. Brutally tough. And that's why we want to promote recovery. The more we show that recovery is possible, but it's also a better life, that people can hear, well, hold on, if they can do it, maybe I could give it a try. But I definitely would recommend family support, either through Donegal Addiction Services or either through the Alcohol Forum or through the CDP outreach workers. You know, like, there's three people there that if they Google up, they will get the numbers for those. There's a lot of family support out there as well.
Ken, I mean, you know, not the opposite of what's happening in other countries. The government here seem to refuse to want to recognise the carcinogenic problem with alcohol. I don't think there's less pubs, but I don't think there's ever been more booze available than there is now. It's in every shop. All of those pub licences are now off licences. We're seeing the government looking to extend opening hours so that people can drink till 6 o'clock in the morning. Alcohol is intertwined with culture in terms of adverts, sponsorship, football. Do we need to pull back on that, Ken, a little bit? Do you know what I mean? And sort of start saying, right, what impact is this having on people's lives? Not just the drinkers too, but the primarily probably women that dread that football game at the weekend because they know he's heading out for a few pints, and he, she knows that when he gets back, he's going to have a go with her, or she has to try and hide from him. Do we need to sort of, as a society, say, well, is this the country that we want? Is this the relationship with alcohol that we want, Ken?
I think, like, you know, I mean, I wasn't a house drinker. I didn't drink in the house, but, I mean, I see a lot, especially with women, I see it through treatment that it's, like, if I want to get a drink, I'll get it. You know? There's no doubt in that, you know what I mean? There was many attempts by family, you know, to try and get me help, you know what I mean? But as I say, I wasn't a house drinker, but if somebody wants to get wine, or if the off-license is closed at 10:30 at night or 11, they'll get it.
You have to think with the taxis,
you know what I mean? Bringing it in, and we hear a lot of that, you know. And I mean, I think I'd say about 90% of women are drinking in the problematic drinking would be drinking in the home. You won't see them in the in the pubs, you know. Other than that, I don't.
Do you think societally? You know, I know the Alcohol Forum. They probably are frustrated with the fact that we're, I'm not speaking on behalf, I'm just interpreting some comments in previous conversations, that we're actually not moving to sort of restrict or to tighten up. We're actually getting more liberal.
We are
in terms of alcohol in this country.
Before I was working in this job, I would have worked with the Alcohol Forum. I would have worked in family support, but I was also working when the public health bill came into place. And like it's evidence-based worldwide, the more outlets, the more availability, the higher the rate of alcohol abuse, addiction, and hidden harm within families.
Yeah.
Okay. It's evidence-based worldwide.
There's lots of hope for people out there if, you know, both Ken and James are former dependent on alcohol and now both in recovery for a long time and living happy and fulfilled lives. If you reach out, the help is there. And it seems to be really quite well resourced. Again, this Saturday, the 23rd of September, the CDP are holding a recovery walk in the town park in Letterkenny. It's from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. So it's lovely to get out in the fresh air as much as anything else.
Yeah.
And also there's a ceremony as part of that as well, James.
Yeah. Yes, the event is about celebrating recovery. It's about bringing together the recovery community in Donegal. It's about bringing their families, but it's also about bringing services together as well. It could be a Donegal Addiction Services, it could be White Oaks, it could be anybody that's involved with recovery. But part of Saturday is we're going to have a small remembrance ceremony for people who didn't make it because of their addiction.
Mm.
Like sadly, on our own scheme, we lost one last year, lovely young fella. He didn't make it. He didn't make it. And there is not every, and that's the sad thing about addiction, not everybody, like any illness, not everybody makes it. So we're just having a wee dignified remembrance ceremony for, and it's open to, if anybody in Donegal has lost a family member to addiction, we will be remembering those people. We will have a wee ceremony there at the day, about halfway through it, to remember the people who lost their battle with addiction.
Yeah. And Ken, if this interview is part of your journey, box ticked, well done.
Yeah,
did you want to say there?
I was just thinking of gratitude, you know what I mean? And I just want to be, I'm very thankful to White Oaks and the staff in White Oaks. And I'm also very thankful to CDP. And the likes of James and Margaret Turner and the people down there, you know, that have helped me. And obviously, my family, you know what I mean, have stuck by me. And they were tremendous, you know. And my mother and father are deceased, you know. But, you know what I mean, you think of people like that if you're doing something like this. You know?
Of course, yeah.
So, and look, listen.
And you're always their baby. It doesn't matter if you're 40.
There absolutely is hope for people. You know, there are.
James, settle yourself.
What did you say?
I said your mum and dad and mine have passed on as well. You're always their kid, you know, right up until the day they even pass on, 40, even if you're 40.
Thanks for that. I didn't count that.
You see, I wasn't suggesting you were 40. I wasn't guessing your age. James trying to get me in trouble. But I get you. And as you say, you remember those people too. And hopefully they're looking down and proud of you, Ken, for what you've done with your life. Did you want to add something else, James?
Yeah, we also have an event on next Wednesday. I think it's Wednesday the 27th at 7 p.m. in the community centre. We're having a walking football game as well. Again, it's open to anybody that's involved with recovery, family members, people in recovery services, open to all ages, all genders. You don't have to be as good as Pele. It brings everybody onto the one level, walking football.
But it's also good fun.
It's about having a laugh and having a bit of crack.
And Ken, well done. James, thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
If people just land down at the town park at 1,
Yeah.
Isn't it? It's just
yeah, land between down. 1 and 3. Just land down, yeah. Come. Right. Okay. Yeah. Right, there's tea and coffee there. There's music. There's face painting for the kids. And there's games there for the kids as well. It's a family event.
Well done to the two men, James and Ken. Great listening to your stories. You are heroes. Dolores says, great to hear the two men talk of their experiences, strengths and hopes. God bless you both, identifying with the person too that called in also, which is nice. Mm. All right, thanks very much to our last two guests. Really useful conversation. I hope it's helped someone or inspired someone out there. You always hope that's what happens when you do things like this. It's been a mixed bag of a show, isn't it, between that and Murder Capital singing and all the other stuff. You get it all here on the 9 till noon show. And thanks so much for being with us. It's greatly appreciated. We still have some business news with Kieran coming up and plenty of other bits and bobs to keep you entertained up until 12 here on the 9 till noon show. I used to be a big drinker, says a listener, and mixed it with prescription drugs as a big part of depression. Recovery is a long, lonely time, but worth it. I regret it all now, but hindsight is a great thing. Indeed, I get you. Good morning. Our mortgage went up €56 a month with the last hike. It's a modest semi-detached. We are not in arrears and are just about okay to pay our monthly premium. Will we be considered for mortgage interest relief? Thank you. I'd imagine so, under their proposals. It's your private home. It's not an investment property or what have you, so you should be entitled to that. The only good news is it seems that the ECB have used up all of their interest rate hikes. So we should see a period of stability and then maybe towards the end of next year, a quarter or 0.5% off. That seems to be what the financial experts are saying. So in terms of the shocks, in terms of interest rate hikes, now that it's obviously within the gift of the banks to raise or lower interest rates themselves outside of what the ECB do, except for trackers, but it seems that we are at the top of these interest rate hikes. Hi, Greg, I'm on the tracker mortgage. It's up €370 a month. Wow, can you imagine? If you got a pay rise or you get an extra tenner in tax in the budget or what have you, it wouldn't even look at the extra €370. And then, of course, depending on how you heat your house, the coal or oil, the price of oil, gas as well, really, whichever way you look at it. And now the price of petrol and diesel, it's up over €180 now in most places. Diesel started to creep ahead of petrol as well in terms of prices. We're just heading into the winter again now and the bills are starting to stack up again. It's a real pain. Good morning, Greg. Will you tell that man that we know it was the government in Europe who gave free money to people not to work that drove up inflation? He never said that was a factor. I know exactly what you're saying, and I've heard this said before, but the economy is our economy is flourishing. We don't see, but it's flourishing. We're at full employment. The economy is operating almost at full capacity. Everybody that wants a job effectively has a job at the moment. People are able to move within jobs to improve their life and situation. €130 billion of savings are on deposit. A lot of people have a lot of money. That's not all COVID payment money. I understand the argument that some make that because people were paid not to work, that's the cause of inflation. There's global inflation. There are countries that never adopted such policies or adopted them different to us. They're also in the same inflationary cycle. So I understand some are saying that, but it's not actually demonstrably true. Now, if they demonstrate to you how that's true rather than just saying something that could be true, then I'd be interested. But it's easy to demonstrate why we are seeing mass inflation. And there's no doubt that the spend coming out of lockdown contributed to that. Greg, feel sorry for the fishermen. Such a hard job and at times dangerous life. Farmers are selling themselves away. They are being tempted by all these handouts coming from Europe, encouraging them to destock their herd, plant their land and trees. If this money stops coming in, they'll regret their decision to sign up for all these schemes. Well, they can look at the fishermen. They're being paid to tie up their boats. They're being paid not to use their quotas. The piers now have cruise ships tied up to them and leisure craft. I think an awful lot of people might say an awful lot what you might see in farming is what we saw in fishing. Yes, Ireland should have a referendum on illegal immigration. France, Italy and Poland are tightening up on what and who gets in. Why shouldn't we deport all proven illegals as the only answer? Otherwise, the country's economy will collapse. Well, there is a policy to, that's what direct provision and all that is, that you assess people, and if they're here illegally, you do deport them. I think what you're talking about, or what's talked about more, is actually really pulling up the drawbridge and not taking our share of agreed refugees. Now, whether you separate out what's happening in Ukraine versus refugees from other countries, how do you phrase that question? Do you know what I mean? Hi, Greg. Mickey Hart, CV at Tyrone, wanted rid of him. He wouldn't go, so they had to kick him out. Louth wanted him to stay, so he walked out, and now he's gone to Derry, where he's not wanted. I'm not getting a true sense of that. I'm hearing a lot of high-profile football people say that, but what are the fans saying? I'd love to hear from more fans. Greg, I had a mortgage out between 1992 and 1994, and the interest rate was 18% then. I remember, funny you should say that, I think it was the 80s, my mum and dad's mortgage was 15%, but it's like comparing apples with oranges, I think. I don't think it's like the same as it is now. Say, for instance, if you were earning 30 grand a year back in the 80s or 90s or 20 grand a year, you could get a house for maybe 80 grand. So that was four times your wage, right? Now, if you're on 60 grand a year, four times your wage is 240,000, and it wouldn't even look at a house. Do you know what I mean? Certainly not a comparable house. So it's the things have changed since then, so it's not an exact comparison. That's what I was told anyway. Hi, I'm wondering if your listeners can help me. My two children have grown up a lot and have a lot of unbroken toys in good nick. Where can you give them into that other children can enjoy? Thank you. Now, we're coming into a very important time of the year. This listener and many other listeners as well have toys that are in good nick. They're not boxed, they're not unbroken, but they would like someone else to get the benefit of them. I did see on Facebook a charity shop looking for stuff, but anyone out there that could make use of unbroken toys in good condition that could be passed on to other children now that this listener's children have grown up a little. Right, okay. Good morning, Greg. Can you please congratulate Dean Cunahan from Milford on winning a gold medal at the Ploughing Championship in the under-21s yesterday from all his family? Thank you. Yes, indeed, we can. Congratulations to you. Right, let's take a break. We'll return with business news.
Business Matters, in association with ATU Donegal Faculty of Business. Now is the time to realise your potential by enrolling on the part-time degree in business. Only 3 years with one evening per week on campus and another online. Open up your future by contacting the faculty office on 918-6206 or visit lyit.ie today.
Okay, it's Wednesday. That means there's another edition of Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast available for you right now on our website and elsewhere. We'll tell you more of that anon, but we have its producer, presenter in studio with us, Kieran O'Donnell. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, before we get to the pod, let's catch up on some business news out there and an award for Nancy's Bar.
Yeah, Nancy's Bar in Ardra was the North East Region winner in the Best Tourist Pub competition that was sponsored by Fáilte Ireland. There were seven regional award winners in total in the competition that celebrates pubs that go above and beyond to create memorable experiences for locals and international visitors. So well done to them.
If that's the North East winner, I'd love to see the North West winner.
I think it was... That was looking after the top half or the top corner where we are. I think the next one was down, I think maybe in Sligo or on down that way.
Good stuff. Female CEOs are increasing in representation.
Yeah, the share of female CEOs in Ireland has risen to 19%. That's an increase of 5% in less than 2 years. Those figures are contained in the latest Gender Balance in Business survey published by the Central Statistics Office. So the survey showed a continuing decline in the proportion of females in chief financial officer roles. The proportion of female financial officers in 2023 was 25.7%. That's down from 28.1% in 2021 and 29.7% in 2019. So a notable decrease there in just 2 years.
Yeah, indeed. Interesting, this next topic, and I'm not sure what I'm going to say is necessarily connected, but I was speaking to someone there during the summer, before the summer, who was on one of the first delegations that went out to China. I don't know, it was decades ago. Mm-hmm. And at that point, there was no real links there as such. And it's the kind of a thing that happens that, you know, what comes from it is hard to sort of quantify. But since then, since those pathways were opened, obviously now... were massive exporters to China, and it's worth multiples of millions, if not billions, to the Irish economy. And my point being is that it wasn't there before, and then from little seeds, big acorns grow. So I say it's not necessarily the exact same thing, but there is a conference taking place about that market.
Yeah, I will say, Greg, you're not too far off the mark. The Radisson Hotel and the Rakini will be the venue for the Growing Business with Asia from the Northwest Region Knowledge Hub Conference, and that's taking place on Monday, October the 2nd, and Tuesday, October the 3rd. The event is being held in partnership with ATU and Udhras na Gaeltachta and will be supported by Donegal County Council and the Rakini Chamber of Commerce. So people can attend in person, Greg, or online, and the conference is aimed at boosting trade links, which you referred to earlier, between the Northwest and Asia, which is being widely regarded now as the world's wealthiest region.
Rightio, there was a rush and an improvement in terms of, you know, Irish businesses, their online presence in the last few years, mm-hmm. for obvious reasons, but still work to be done by the sounds of things.
Yeah, I was surprised at this story, Greg. Irish small and medium enterprises are falling behind with e-commerce and must evolve to meet a consumer demands, and that is according to a new web health report published by AE. That's the National Registry for .ie domain names. The report included 525 companies, and it found that less than half, 46% of retailers, have cart functionality on their website, and that's basically enabling them to sell online. So retail industry trade body Retail Excellence Ireland, understandably, has called for additional government support to help retail SMEs to develop their online presence. So as you say, while there was a major shift, Greg, to online, There's obviously a bit of a lag in terms of keeping up with the demand, and obviously
I think a lot of businesses use their website or the social media, and I do find it frustrating at times to drive traffic to in-person shopping. I presume if you have the cart, then it's another layer of activity. You have to have someone who deals with postage and stock. Yeah. And
I remember being on a digital marketing course, Greg, must be 7 or 8 years ago, and we're talking about the different steps. There could be 6 or 7 clicks before you actually get to the purchase point. And I suppose maybe is there work there in terms of maybe shortening that journey, reducing the number of clicks. But ultimately, when it comes to a business selling online, it's all about putting goods in the cart and getting paid for them.
Exactly. And I mean, you look at Amazon, is anyone doing it better than them? You look at
the model.
You hit buy now,
yeah.
Boom. It's effectively in the post, and that's the area people are competing in. And lots of people would love to do more online shopping if the products and the services were there. PGIM have new offices.
Yeah, PGIM, after 23 years in Ireland. PGIM Ireland.
I'm still going to call them PGIM.
PGIM Ireland opened its new state-of-the-art offices earlier this month in Letterkenny, formerly known as Primerica. PGIM's Letterkenny building was officially opened by its Chief Operations and Innovation Officer, Robin Duncan.
Yeah, it's like I'm trying to get us to call Ireland West Airport, Knock Airport, Ireland West. It's Knock.
You're not for Virgin. You're not for Turnham.
I'm just no fat. PGIM, no problem. Right, shall we go on to what's coming up on this week's show?
Yes, Greg. On this week's programme, I'll be speaking to Sean McVeigh from Precision Sports Technology, retired US-based businessman John T. Fries, and CEO with Accountant Online, Larissa Feeney. So, Greg, the pavilion at Rathmullen House was the venue for Friday's Disrupt by the Sea Shark Tank event, which saw 6 company founders pitch to a panel of US investors for a cash investment of $100,000. Letterkenny man Sean McVeigh, who is Chief Commercial Officer and Lead Sports Scientist with Precision, got the nod from the 3 American investors, and he also got the nod as well from the audience at the event. In this clip, Sean talks about the size of the American market and the potential for the demand for his company's product there.
The size of the market in America is absolutely huge, and it's definitely where we want to get the company to. And I suppose we've been preparing for that for quite a while now, in the sense of trying to understand each of the major sports over there, because the sporting landscape is very different to what it is here in Ireland and even in Europe, in terms of just American football and baseball and basketball being the three biggest sports. So understanding, I suppose, the needs of the coaches and athletes in those sectors, and then as well at university and high school level, understanding the needs of those, because you've got a range of different sports within those organizations as well. So it's really important. We really wanted to understand how it can fit into those settings, while also looking to kind of partner with, I suppose, flagship organizations or clubs over there to help kind of validate us in the marketplace as well.
Yeah, he sounds confident and assured, Kieran.
Yeah,
they've developed a computer vision software, Greg, and to give real-time feedback on exercise techniques that will improve performance, reduce injury, and increase participation. So there's the cost saving is one thing. How quick it can actually assess and scan teams, for example, is the other thing. The likes of Liverpool, Chelsea, the Cleveland Cavaliers are among 50 teams that have already signed up as trial partners for this sort of technology. That's okay. So it's a major, major step.
And that's the time to get in if there's any opportunities. And,
The other thing, Greg, it's a ready-to-go product, and the US market, and obviously the US market was where they were pitching to. Yep. So he delivers pitch very well.
One of those US investors, John T. Fries, or Fries.
Yeah, John T. Fries, yeah. John was one of the three investors, Greg, as we mentioned, and he backed Sean's plans to scale up precision sports technology on Friday afternoon. And during our conversation, I asked John how he found the experience along the shores of Lough Swilly.
Yeah, very interesting. It wasn't exactly cold, so we asked for their deck, which is a summary of their capabilities. It was very interesting. We had some preconceived ideas of who we thought were the winner. And of course, as it played out, a lot of them were better than we thought. Okay. And there was two farm products. One was a farm product, which is a weighing of the cows and et cetera, which, as I begged off on that because I grew up in the city, and so did Mark, the other judge. But Mike, fortunately, he had a lot of great questions. But that we learned a lot from that presentation, and as I said, it was a lot. The pitch was a lot better than what the deck was. Okay. And we saw a lot of upside. We saw a lot of upside on a lot of the companies. We had a tough choice.
Yeah, great experience for all those taking part in it. I mean, it's called Shark Tank in America, yeah. Australia, Canada. People more familiar with the process under the moniker of Dragon's Den here. Right, okay, interesting stuff. And as I say, great platform and great experience. You also spoke to another person, Larissa?
Yeah, CEO of Accountant Online, Larissa Finney. She is lead entrepreneur on the Acorns 9 programme, Greg, and that begins in October. And here she explains how that programme will be rolled out.
So it's a structured 6-month programme. It's one day a month, not even a day, like a half a day a month. So one session a month. And every month we go through a different topic. So essentially, there are groups of female entrepreneurs who are led by a lead entrepreneur. And there's usually about 7 or 8 on every table. And every month we go through a different area of business, such as, sales and marketing, for example, finance, operations, strategy. And we take the entrepreneurs through the program, through a journey. Going through the main pillars of business and helping them understand what's important. And crucially, every business around the table is in a different industry, so there's no competitor issues, but everybody helps each other. So everybody's at the same stage. Usually businesses have either just started or maybe even in the idea stage. So everybody's very early in their journey and they can really bring their strengths to help others on the table as well.
Great stuff. Sounds like you enjoyed it too, Kieran.
Yeah, look, it was a good experience down in Rathmullen. Larissa is a sort of an annual thing, catching up with herself. Just going back to John T. Fries, right. He is a first generation Irish-American. His father was born in 1900 in Kilmacrennan. And he emigrated in 1923 with his two sisters. And he described himself as having three different careers. Healthcare was the middle career. He's sort of half retired now, still working. But computers was the business he got into. And one of the questions I asked him during the interview was, I always ask, what's the best lesson you've learned in business? And he said, look, that's a good question. But he said, realize your expectations, realize your limitations. He spent 25 or 26 years in computers. He said he couldn't program a computer. And he couldn't fix a computer, but he could sell computers. Mm. He got awards for selling, so he said, look, stick to what you're good at.
Elon Musk can't build electric cars or rocket ships himself, but he knows how to get it done. The full interviews with Sean McVeigh, John T. Fries and Larissa Feeney are available now to download on our website, highlandradio.com, or stream from there. It's also on Spotify or iTunes, and it's on air live as well too, Kieran.
Yeah, on Sunday evening, Greg, after the 6 o'clock news.
And if anyone wants to get in touch with you about the show...
Yes, just drop me an email, please, businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Okay, Kieran O'Donnell there. That is Business Matters, as I say, available for you right now. Thanks, Kieran. Back with Kieran next Wednesday. Back with more after this break. Okay, time to welcome into studio our last guest of today. Unless it goes really bad and it's really short and then I have to grab someone to bring them on instead of Anya Kelly. Good morning, Anya. How are you getting on?
Not too bad, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. Anya's technical assistant at the Digital Creative Lab in Corran Donagh. And there's a workshop upcoming. Talk to us about it, the topic.
So we're having an event now this Saturday called Meet and Code, Gaming for All. So we're basically going to tackle some of the issues that are in gaming, basically like sexism, violence, racism. And we just want to make it that gaming can be inclusive for all.
So just really get rid of Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, well, I suppose. But the way we want to do it is that we're not lecturing kids on you shouldn't be playing this game, you shouldn't be playing that game. We want to make it educational. We want to make them aware. Because some kids, some parents aren't aware of what these games can do and how they can affect these kids. So,
is there a particular problem with, I mean, violence certainly, but, you know, racism, anti-women, like, is there evidence to suggest that, that there is a lot of that in a lot of the games that are currently out there?
Well, there definitely is evidence in the fact that, like, half of the gaming public is women and only 1 in 5 game developers are women. So it's a case of, yes, they're playing them, but they're not making the games, so... The thought is that maybe they have different perspectives on games, that maybe it doesn't have to all be violent, all be racism, all be sexism, but they're thinking, why should I go out and make a game that isn't like that? Because it might not be popular. So, but then you look at the likes of Little Big Planet, Minecraft, Roblox, that's creative, that's teamwork. They're creating, they're not destroying, which that's what our event wants to do. So we have taken the expert support from a dairy-based company called Kippy. They're going to come in and basically educate us as well as the attendees, because we're not experts at it either, but we're open to learn. We want to be able to deliver workshops that are inclusive, that give out the right information. So they're going to give us expert support. We're going to have brainstorming. We're going to have tackle some of the issues, have a brainstorm of like how could we change it? How do we think we could change our thoughts on gaming? But then also the other side of the workshop and the event is that the kids and attendees are going to get the chance to make their own game. So we're going to use an app called GDevelop. We're going to teach them how to make these games, but also let them tackle issues that we spoke about and bring that into the game. Make it inclusive so that it's welcoming for all backgrounds, all, you know, all genders, everything like that. We want to show them. Again, we don't want to lecture them. We're not going to tell them, you can't play this game, don't play that game. They're not going to listen to us.
Yeah, and of course, too, I mean, everyone's different and the space is different. There's going to be some, a lot of the women that are playing games want to play in that environment. They do want to play Battlefield or Call of Duty or whatever it might be. But then there's all those that want to game but feel that they have to play in that environment, because that's really, you know, particularly in terms of multiplayer and what have you, that's an awful lot of what's out there outside of the sports game. So I suppose this will be an interesting straw poll of young people, obviously, to sort of find out what they want. I'd be really interested in sort of what the girls say. What I don't think they necessarily want girly games per se. I think we're past that now at this point. Do you know what I mean? Sort of putting people into sort of gender stereotypes. But it'd be interesting to find out what would they love to see in that space. Because, as you say, 1 in 5... 4 out of 5 developers are fellas, so we can't presume they're meeting that audience's wants.
Yeah, well, that's what we want, to open the floor to listen to the 12, like our events aimed at 12 to 16 year olds. We want to hear from them. What do they want? What do they want to see? But they might see issues that we don't see. We just see the stereotypical of people are calling people names, people are leaving people out. They might see more than us, and they could teach us a thing or two, as well as us learning from the likes of Kippy coming in and giving us extra support. We want to hear from the teenagers that are coming on to us as well.
Yeah.
But we just thought it'd be interesting, and just to see, because we'd like to put on more and more events, because like us, we are based in Corran Donagh in the Digital Creative Lab. We put on different events throughout the year. Our aim is to deliver digital skills to the community, because we are a rural area, and we have to say thanks to our corporate sponsor, the Inishon Co-op, for letting us do this. We deliver workshops to primary school, secondary kids, and we have in-house workshops, outside workshops, and our aim is to deliver these digital skills, and part of that is, in this world, gaming. We don't know everything about it. Kids don't know everything about it. Parents don't know everything about it. So with a workshop like this now on Saturday, it's going to open our eyes and hopefully the kids' eyes to go away with seeing some issues that are out there, but maybe how to tackle these issues. Maybe they didn't know how to before.
For sure. And listen, I mean, you might have engaged with some of these 12 to 16-year-olds already, but for others, you know, especially sort of being able to look at the back end of a game and game development, who's to say what it might lead to in terms of their aims and goals for their career? Because it's a very lucrative, it's worth more than the film industry now, the gaming industry.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Which is astonishing, really.
But, like, everyone always, some, like, I know somewhere I'm chatting about the violence, racism. There is positives to gaming. You know, I'm not just saying gaming's negative. It's, there is negatives and positives. A positive is the social side. It's not like me and you going for a cup of coffee outside. It's them meeting up with their kid, their friends. They're socialising. They're playing. They're doing a common goal. Like, say the likes of Minecraft and Roblox, they're, like I said, they're creating. They're not destroying. They have to work as a team. They're learning them skills. They're learning to communicate. They're learning to build. They're learning to express themselves. They're not being limited to, you have to destroy this to win. It's a case of, let's go together. How do you think we should build this?
And people might go, oh, here we go. All woke again about embracing diversity and this, that and that, right? But I don't see it like that. Or maybe I'm missing the point. Like, a lot of what happens in games is, it's sort of passive violence, you know. So talk of the GTA, you know, you can go and beat people up, all right? Or, you know, you're shooting, you might not make the exact connection between firing a gun, but passively it's aggressive. It is, and in terms of inclusivity, it doesn't necessarily mean that you make a game where everybody's different and represents all of the hot topics that are around at the moment. It's just that it's passively a space whereby you're still having fun, there's still a competitive nature to it, or whatever the children decide themselves, but it just is passively more inclusive and more reflective.
Yeah, well, the way we see it is, like, an inclusive game is a game that actually welcomes all players. It doesn't matter their background, their gender.
It's not there to push a narrative or to indoctrinate. It's there just to say, let's have more games that are that have more nuances to them.
Yeah, and from that, like, we want to, like, show them the issues and, like, you know, maybe help address these issues. But we also want to make it fun that people have interest in games, but they, like, that's why we want to be able to let them create games as well. So that's why we've done it in two parts, that yes, we're talking about the issues and talking about how we could change these things, but we also want to let them have a bit of fun. So that's why we've created the second half of the event, to let them create games, show them a platform, how you can create a game from the ground up. You, like, they'll be designing, creating an environment, characters, you know, themes, and we hope that they bring the issues that maybe we've addressed into that, and to maybe show us like how things could be done a bit different, and they could be the ones that are making games in 10, 15 years, you know?
Yeah, for sure, and why not? So it is in the Digital Creative Lab in Carndonagh. It's this Saturday from 11:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Anya, who I'm speaking to here, is the technical assistant at the lab and has been pointing out that this is free and it's aimed at 12 to 16 year olds. So how do people sort of register or turn up, or what's the story there, Anya?
So we have our website. We're connected with Sprayoga Sport. So if you go on our website, sprayogasport.ie, you'll see our booking system on there. And as I said, it's all free. So you click, you register your child on there, you can create an account, and that is it then. You come on and on Saturday. So, and then when you're on our website too, you'll be able to see all the stuff that we do all throughout the year. Mm. We have summer camps, holiday camps, after-school clubs. We're also nominated, shortlisted for an Excellence in Leadership in a Charity Award, so you can also vote for us on that if you just want to have a wee look at that. But it's a good way to stay connected with our community. We are a rural community, but we're a charity based in Carndonagh, so we want to try help our community as best we can. So it's good to stay connected. So we're also on social medias at Sprayoga Sport. So at least we have everything updated on there, so that we're doing throughout the year.
And just for those who might be wearing, most will, Sprayoga Sport is S-P-R-A-O-I, Agus obviously, and then Sport. So the Spree part of it is S-P-R-A-O-I. Great stuff, Anya. It's exciting. And I think it's lovely for the young people as well to sort of see, to get an idea of how the games that they love and the games that they play are actually created. Do you know what I mean? Because it's just released and they start playing it, but they get an understanding of game engines and all that.
Well, that's what's important to us in the Digital Creative Lab, is that's what our aim is, to deliver these digital skills, where it be game development, digital fabrication with designing, you know, cups, keyrings, or showing kids about STEM, Steam, electronic circuits. That's our aim at the moment. We're delivering workshops out to primary schools, secondary schools. We bring the equipment out to them. We deliver 6-week workshops on these different topics. STEM and STEAM is on the school curriculum at the moment, so that's why we're happy to go out and provide these with equipment that we have as well. So just providing these digital skills, it helps the rural areas that don't have the resources, don't have the education on
Why
it.
Why shouldn't we, just because we live? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you should fill in that gap.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it's great, and we have to thank the schools and the community for taking us on for that, because they're the ones that support us. They're the ones that are getting the word out there. So again, we're new school year, we're out in new schools, past schools we've been to before, but we're open to new workshops, open to new schools, and we have in-house workshops and outside workshops.
Well done. All that information in terms of booking for this Saturday and all the other work that Spriaga Sport does is available on their website, Spriaga Sport. Okay. Anya, thank you very much indeed. I really do appreciate it.
That's thank you Anya very much for having
Kelly.
Me.
No, it's our pleasure. Anya Kelly, technical assistant at the Digital Creative Lab in Carndonagh. And that's where we have to leave it on the programme for today. Thanks to all of you who listened to the show, those of you who watched the show, and everyone who texted and called in. Any comments we didn't get to today, we will carry them over until tomorrow. But for me, Greg Hughes and Carolyn Orr and Niamh Shields, we'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9.